Thank you. Well, I've known Racine for more than 20 years, and congratulations for his birthday. I fly all the way from Taiwan for this conference, which is actually unusual for me. In any case, Racine certainly is one of the most original mathematicians that I know of. It still takes time for me to understand his work, since the first time I learned his work on homological meter symmetry, which I'm still struggling to understand. Although I always like to learn things more in a geometric manner, I'm not an algebraic person. But still, that inspired a great deal about the geometry that I've been doing, including the SYC conjecture. So today's talk is somewhat related to trying to understand meter symmetry in a geometrical manner, to the extent that I believe what geometry tells me. It may not be accurate, but still a lot of interesting geometry come out from that. So this is a work that I have been doing with Zhang, who was my postdoc at one point. Now he is in Erwan. 5 years ago, we have been working on this. So Calabria would be defined to be those with first train class equals zero. And as we know, in the last 30 years, we have been talking about meter symmetry, which is one of the most important symmetry for Calabria manifolds. It began with the important observation by several people in 1989, which is just a flip of a side of the representation of superconformal algebra. So a simple consequence is that the Calabria manifold will appear in pairs where the H11 and the H21 would be flipped, would be interchanged. That's, of course, the simplest part of the meter change. But still, that was an important observation and has inspired many people to do computer search for it at the very beginning. And then, of course, a very fundamental work due to Candelas and others is to compute the counting function of the residual curve on the quintet. That really makes mathematicians change their mind about what physicists are doing. And that was a very good, important consequence of understanding how to identify topological A and B model. And this has inspired many mathematical work. Some of them are actually contributed by Concevich on understanding localization, and many, many people have contributed to the work. So I'm glad that some of them was proved rigorously, but still depending on the formula constructed by Candelas and all. So it's not a deep understanding yet, even though some formula were proved. Well, as we know, historically, in 1994, in ICM lecture, Concevich gave the first important talk on the homological meter symmetry conjecture. That was before the plane was invented, the deep plane was invented by physicists. So that was fantastic, and he proposed that they derive Foucault category on symplectic manifold as a meter equivalent to the derived category of coherent sieves, which we have learned in the last few days a great deal about, a great deal of activities in the last few days that we saw, which I'm not competent to talk about, actually. I'm not familiar with category theory. So we will be very much more low-key, no category here, and we will talk about geometry that we learned. Most of the questions remained nonetheless, because most of the work has been dealing with toric geometry, which we know how to compute. But still, there a great deal of interesting questions has not been answered for more general Calabrian manifolds. So today, I would like to consider those which are not Kähler. The reason I'm interested in not Kähler Calabrian manifolds, not only because in dimension bigger than equal to 3, there are many more non-Kähler manifolds than we can imagine, but also I want to single out the symplectic structure of the manifold in distinguish from complex structure, and non-Kähler complex manifold give rise symplectic structure by itself, and we can understand it better. So a large class of non-Kähler Calabial free forms were known and due to a construction by Clemens and Freeman, Robert Freeman. So these are well known to many people, but I will talk about it first anyway. So we start off from a smooth Calabial free form. Y, let's call it. And there is a collection of mutually disjoint rational curves sitting in Y. These curves are supposed rational curves and has normal bundles O minus 1 plus O minus 1. So it can be broken down. And so you broke it down following Clemens, and you obtain singular Calabial manifold with ordinary double pawn. So that's a well-known construction. Then Freeman proposed a condition to deform X naught into smooth complex manifold. So the condition was well known. Freeman did the infinitesimal deformation, and 10 later make it to be more than infinitesimal. Anyway, after you obtain a smooth complex manifold, the canonical Lie bundle of the resulting manifold is still trivial. So it can be deformed to a Moisissure manifold, and it is Calabial in the sense that the canonical Lie bundle is trivial, so first trend cost equals zero. But now in general, it's non-Kähler. The reason is that each time when you do this, you are killing the second Betti number. And eventually, you can kill them all. So there's no second Betti number whatsoever, and therefore cannot be Kähler for sure. So in this case, in general, if the homology is right, you prove that the manifold is actually diffeomorphic to connect sum of S3 cross S3, according to the theorem of Wall. So there's a bunch of very nice, interesting manifolds, which is just like donuts, generalized Riemann surface in high dimension. So there are handles given by S3 cross S3. So beautiful manifolds. And this is a very nice manifold, although it's non-Kähler. And this construction sometimes is called Conifold transition. It's a global version of Conifold transitions. In 1987, Miles Rhee made an interesting proposal, although he refused to call it a conjecture. He called it fantasy. And so people sometimes call it Rhee's fantasy. He said this vast collection of Calabial manifolds in general with completely different topology can be connected if they are deformable to Moisissure manifold. This manifold can fit into a single universal moduli space in which each of them can be connected to another one precisely through the Clemens-Freeman conifold transition. So that was nice if any Calabial manifold can be tunneling to another one through such a construction. And then we can hopefully understand each other by this tunneling. But of course, it's a very non-standard way of moving from one algebraic manifold to another one, not what algebraic geometer would normally do. But here, it's clear that we have to go through non-Kähler manifolds because the in-between are connect sum of S3 cross S3. So if we take Rhee's proposal seriously, we got to understand these non-Kähler Calabial manifolds. So we have to understand the tunneling, how they move from one to another one, and what kind of geometry we can give it to them. So that's one of the motivations I am interested in studying non-Kähler manifolds. At the same time, when Richard Thomas came to Harvard, I think in 1999, we were interested in the middle of such a construction. So we look at the symplectic middle of the Clemens-Freeman construction, calling for transition. So you remember when we go in the Clemens-Freeman construction, we blow down the S2, the residual curves, which are S2, and create a S3, Lagrangian cycle. So we said, why not go the reverse? Instead of shrinking the S2 to a point, to move it to S3, we go backwards. We move S3 to S2 instead. And in this way, we can construct new symplectic manifolds. So just similar to what Freeman do, there's a condition, global condition, for shrinking the Lagrangian S3, disjoint Lagrangian S3 together to in order to form a smooth, globally defined symplectic manifold. So in this form, we kill S3, H3, the third cohomology, in order to create second homology. So we shrink the Lagrangian free cycle, replace them by symplectic two-sphere. And this was proposed by the paper appeared in 2002 by Smith, Thomas, and myself. We were able to construct many symplectic, new symplectic manifolds in this way. But fortunately, we could not go all the way in the most general situation. But nonetheless, we have found a lot of symplectic manifolds in this way. Eventually, we would hope to get manifolds which is connexum of CP3. So we expect connexum of CP3 to play a role like connexum of S3 cross S3. So connexum of S3 cross S3 behave like non-Kähler complex manifold, and connexum of CP3 will behave like symplectic manifold, which admits not compatible complex structure. So we expect these two constructions are mirror to each other. One is connexum of S3 cross S3, and the other one is connexum of CP3, which admits symplectic structure but not complex structure. So so we call this a symplectic carabials, although they have no complex structure that we know of. And there are many other people who has contributed to this kind of construction, notably due to Fry and Penhoff, who construct simply connect symplectic carabial manifold with the third Betti number equals zero. So So I like to study the geometry of such manifolds and hope to understand in what sense they are mirror to each other. Although geometrically they are very tempting to see that they are mirror to each other. For different perspective, another reason for considering non-Kähler mirror pair or mirror of carabials come from the SYC description of mirror symmetry, where we study a T3 vibration. So T3 is a Lagrangian toroid, special Lagrangian toroid, and we apply T duality on the fiber in order to obtain the mirror geometry. So this, of course, has been clarified a great deal in the world of Gross Seibert, and extending the SYC idea, the T-duality, we also like to consider applying T-duality on non-Kähler carabial manifold that are toroid vibrations. We hope to apply this consideration to the pair that we discussed earlier. Now, the important question is what kind of geometric structure we should put on a non-Kähler Calabi-Yau manifolds. We have to put in constraints like supersymmetry and what kind of geometric structure we can put on. It's kind of tough to look at it from the point of view of geometry because we don't know much geometry of non-Kähler complex manifolds or or symplectic manifolds for that matter, unless there's some almost complex structure to help. Anyway, so we look for some motivation from physics. Already in the mid-80s, 1986, people has been considering non-Kähler Calabi-Yaus when we consider flux and planes wrapping cycles of the internal six-dimensional space. So when there are flux, such as similar to electric or magnetic fields, and the planes are introduced, they represent additional energy, and that needs to have a bad reaction to deform the space itself. So although the background could be Kähler, but after you react to the flux or the planes, the manifold need not be Kähler in general. And the supersymmetry condition of the string tell us that the internal space in general is not a Kähler manifold when flux and the planes are introduced. So this, for example, appeared in the paper of Andy Strominger in 1986, where he wrote down some equation in relation to heterotic string. Andy Strominger's paper was on heterotic string. But here, we are more interested at this moment to 2A and 2B string theory for the general supersymmetric condition that we are interested in. And we kind of motivated by the generalized complex formulation introduced by Hitchin. And there are equations which we have been studying with Zhang. They are motivated by several authors, especially Tomasello, who was visiting Harvard at the time. So we worked with him on understanding these equations. We found some interesting cohomologies for generalized complex geometry, which I will describe here. So these are generalized complex structure formulation inspired by supersymmetry. So first of all, let us recall that the Kähler Calabi-Yau condition on a six-dimensional manifold can be described as the requirement of a SU-free structure with a Kähler form, Hermitian form, small omega and capital omega, which satisfy the closed condition. One is the complex integrability for complex structure and the symplectic structure that d omega equals zero, and also the Ricci-Flagg condition, which is a complex Mohn-Schoenberg equation on the last one, the Ricci-Flagg condition. So these are the structure related to Calabi-Yau structure, which give rise to SU-free holonomy. Now, in the case of type 2B with flux, so we study the presence of the orientifold O5 planes wrapped over holomorphic curves. It becomes the following conditions, turns out. One is the capital omega is closed, so complex structure integrable. And the balance condition, this omega not necessarily is Kähler now, is omega square in the complex free manifold to be closed. And also, there's a distribution function F satisfy this equation, dd bar exponential F times small omega. Dd bar of it is equal to a distribution, low B. So B is the sum of currents or holomorphic curves, and low B is a Poincaré dual of it. So it's a four form in the sense of distribution equal to the left hand side. And F is defined by the last equation here, replacing the Calabi-Yau equation. Then the holomorphic freeform omega wedge omega bar was originally small omega to the power cube without F. Now with F, it becomes like that. So these are the equation, the supersymmetric symmetry equation for the Calabi-Yau manifold with complex structure, but no Kähler structure. So the supersymmetry is replaced by the second condition, balance condition. Now, so the Kählerian condition is now relaxed to the balance condition, which is written down in here, plus a source term equation, which is the third equation I wrote down earlier. Now, this is an interesting equation, the balance condition. It was introduced in physics literature without knowing some literature in mathematics, which was studied quite a bit earlier in 1982 by Mary Louise Michelson in Stony Brook. Already she was studying manifold, which is balanced. So this condition is simply says, given a Hermitian one-one form to the power n minus one, it is closed. That's the, in general, that's a balanced condition. So this is rather interesting condition, actually, mathematically speaking, because it's preserved under proper holomorphic submersions. And most remarkably, it is preserved under birational transformations. And we know that Kählerian condition is not preserved under birational transformation. But on the other hand, it's known that balance condition is preserved under birational transform. So it's natural for birational geometry. And there are many such manifolds. In particular, the Trister space are all balanced. Trister space over four-dimensional anti-shelf dual manifolds. So I construct some of the Calabi-Yau manifolds by taking Blanche cover over the Trister space. So in particular, if you take the connex sum of CP2, which is anti-shelf dual, and the Trister space is good, it's a balanced condition, and you can do a double cover to obtain non-Kähler Calabi-Yau space. So there are many modules of manifold, although they are not Kähler, but actually the Trister space could be modules on. There are quite a lot of them, including the Trister space for the connex sum of CP2. So there are quite a lot of such manifolds. Now, so in about 5 years ago, Fu, Jun Li and I proved that in the deformation given by, proposed by Clemens and Freeman, when you do the conifold transition, the manifold, although it's non-Kähler, it does emit a smooth balance metric. So although there's no a priori geometry, in fact, we can put a balance condition over those transistors. So in particular, therefore, we have balance metric on connex sum S3 cross S3. Now, actually, we'd like to do more. There's some equation which we take into account of the back reaction to the supersymmetric condition here. And this will make the geometry to be more rigid. So in other words, there's a besides the equation of existence of balance metric, there's an equation similar to Calabi-Yau condition, which will make the moduli space with finite dimensional. This needs to be solved, and this is still not known for this case. But I expect that to be true. So now, I want to look back in the middle situation of this whole thing now. So this is very similar to the Maxwell equation, if you think about it. So balance condition is d omega squared equals 0, And then the source equation, which I wrote down as a third equation, 2i dd bar ef omega equal rho b, similar to Maxwell equation. So if we emphasize omega to be right star of omega squared, then the two equations can actually be written in this form. So d omega squared is equal to 0, and dd bar of theta star omega squared equal to rho b. So it's an analog of the Maxwell equation. So interpreting that way, we want to look at the middle of these two equations. So, well, the Maxwell equation is this one. So the curvature 2 form is closed, the Bianchi identity. And then d star f2 equal rho e, there's a Poincaré dual of the electric charge configuration. So this could be looked as an analog of the previous equation sitting here. D omega squared equals 0 and dd bar star omega squared equal rho b. So if we do that, as I said, if we linearize the Maxwell equation, this exact analog of the equation I wrote down, the linearized part. Okay. So here, the important point is that there's a cohomology or the harmonic condition related to the Maxwell equation, namely closed and also co-closed. And that's the analog, the previous one equation is the analog, is d of the 4 form, omega squared is now looked as a unknown. And so d of the linearized of the 4 form is equal to 0, and dd bar star of that equals 0 is the second equation, the source term equation. So this will be looked at as a harmonic condition for the 2-2 element. And the natural cohomology here turns out is a Bochern cohomology. The Bochern cohomology is simply kernel of d as a PP form, divided out by the image of dd bar in the PP form, or PQ, make it more general. So this cohomology was introduced by Bochern and also Eppeli. So so this exactly fits the core for the condition that I imposed earlier. So therefore, the Bochern cohomology is a natural one to use for studying complex balanced manifold, because that's how the balance condition come in. Well, of course, naturally, if the manifold is scalar, the dd bar lemma holds, and the Bochern and the usual Dobu cohomology are in fact isomorphic, so there's nothing really new. But if we are interested in non-scalar manifold, the dd bar lemma no more holds, and then this will be more important to use the dd bar cohomology. So now, we are interested in the symplectic analog of this condition that we just wrote down. So that's what the point of this lecture, looking at the analog conditions for symplectic manifolds. So first of all, the middle dual of the manifold is 2A3D. And we, in there, in the complex 2B3D is actually the exponential I omega, is an important one. You look at the real part of exponential I omega, then the condition of omega squared to be closed is equivalent to D of the real part of exponential I omega equals 0. And now exponential I omega is supposed to be interchanged with capital omega, the free form. So therefore, the middle of the condition, or balance condition, d omega squared equals 0, we interpret it as d of the real part of capital omega equals 0. So the free CO form has the property that d real part of omega equals 0. So this is also suggests by string theory for the symplectic conical transition that Smith, Thomas, and I did. So This condition will be part of the type 2A supersymmetric condition in the presence of orientiform six planes that wrap over special Lagrangian submanifolds. So now, putting the equations together, the Miller of the equation that I wrote down from the complex side would be this free equation, which is now in the symplectic side. So we have a symplectic equation, d omega equals 0, the symplectic form. And then we have a free seal form, which says that d real part of omega equals 0, and also a integral of dd bar, which I will define, d plus and d minus, star of the exponential minus f real capital omega equals low a, where a would be special Lagrangian submanifolds, which is mirror to the holomorphic curves that we discussed earlier. So d plus and d minus will be linear symplectic differential operator that can be thought as the symplectic integral of the complex double operators, d and d bar. So we shall now go into those definitions and the way that it evolves. Anyway, so the source term equation that we were talking would be these two equations. After you linearize, the third equation is d plus d minus star of that equals 0. So this equation would be looked at as a harmonic condition for cohomology. Just like in the previous case, we used Durham cohomology for Maxwell equations. So we introduced some cohomology. So Durham cohomology is kernel D divided by image D. That's corresponding to the Maxwell equation. And the Bottrom condition for the complex deformation. And so type 2B there. So 2A here is the one that we introduced, that kernel D divided by image of D plus D minus, which I will talk immediately. So this is second order differential operators, D plus D minus. So we search for symplectic cohomology. We are surprised to find that actually there are more than one finite dimensional symplectic cohomology of differential forms. And so we found that it's related to the Lefschetz maps and also some cohomology ring and the A infinity structure behind those rings, which I will discuss now. So we will talk about symplectic form, and then we will talk about primitive form, just like in the complex case when we have a symplectic manifold. So primitive form are those that vanishes under contraction with omega inverse. Omega is non-degenerate, so you can talk about omega inverse. So these are the conditions. Just similar to what we learned in complex geometry. So we take the interior product of the form. So B is called a primitive differential form if we satisfy this contraction condition. And so this primitive form will be due, Poincaré due to Lagrangian or co-isotropic condition on subspaces. So co-isotropic submanifolds are those with dimension n plus k. So manifold is 2n dimension. So those n plus k manifold where omega to the power k plus 1 restrict to it is equal to 0. So when k equals 0, these are Lagrangian condition. Omega restrict to the cycle is equal to 0. So for us, co-isotropic submanifold are this kind of manifold that we introduce. Well, that's well known. So we understand that, in fact, co-isotropic subspaces are important for Miller symmetry. Also, especially when we want to expand Foucault category in order for conservative homological Miller symmetry to hold. Anyway, so we are interested in in the primitive cohomology, partly because they are Poincaré due to submanifold, which is co-isotropic. Now let's come into understanding of the Lepsius decomposition in general. So given any dependent form, K form, we can decompose it in the following way. So the BKs are the primitive forms and decompose uniquely in that way. BK plus omega wedge BK minus 2 plus omega square wedge BK minus 4, etc. So this primitive form in the decomposition, BK, BK minus 2, are uniquely determined by the form AK and the way that the symplectic form omega there. These, of course, are the Lepsius decomposition from the SL2 algebra acting on the space of all different forms. So we now have this decomposition, and we can write the, so in the case of six dimensions, you can see how it looks like. These are the simple diagram that you can see. So this is symmetric under the central x at the middle dimension. So they flip from one side to another side. And we can define a reflection operator mapping from left to the right, which we call star R. So this operator mapping left to right because it's symmetric in the vertical x. So we shall use this operator star R later. So for example, star R B2 is omega wedge B2 for that three-dimensional manifold. Well, since omega is symplectic, D of a K form naturally decomposes in a simple form. The important thing is, in case it acts on primitive components, when it acts on primitive form, exterior differentiation only sits inside PS plus 1 plus omega wedge PS minus 1. This gives rise to two operators. So D plus maps the primitive S form to primitive S plus 1 form. D minus maps S form to S minus 1 form. So one increase 1 degree, and the other one decrease 1 degree. So it's similar to the D bar operators. And we, in fact, interpret in that way. So these are natural forms associated to the symplectic geometry. So we can write exterior differentiation to be D plus plus omega wedge D minus. So this gives you a symplectic decomposition of exterior derivatives. And the fact that D squared equals zero implies similar condition for D plus and D minus. So D plus square equals D minus square equals zero. And they anti-commute with each other also. So very similar to D bar operators. And it turns out associated to these operators, there's an elliptic complex associated to it. And it maps primitive forms horizontally. And there's one important connection is joining Pn to Pn in the middle dimension by D plus D minus. That one does not change the degree. One go up, one go down, so preserve the degree. And this turns out to be an elliptic complex. We found out this first, and then found out actually Smith, R.T. Smith did this one for four dimensions in 1976. And also later, we also found out Eastwood has done this around the same time independent with us. So anyway, so we get an elliptic complex associated to the symplectic geometry. Associated with this elliptic complex, we found four different finite dimensional cohomologies, primitive form, which can be looked at as a symplectic invariance for non-Kähler symplectic manifolds. so associated with this elliptic cohomology. They are all finite dimensional because this is elliptic complex. So we draw as a dielectric analog with double cohomology, Apley cohomology and Bertrand cohomology, exactly the same way we look at. So all acting on primitive forms. So so the left-hand side is analog to the right-hand side, as you can see from this picture. And we are interested in this, the last one, kernel D, intersection of P3, and image D plus D minus, intersection of P3, the primitive free forms, in the case of six-dimensional space, as related to the symplectic type 2A string equations. Well, and simple example was Kodaira first and four manifold, which is a T2 vibration over T2. They're globally defined one forms, left invariant one forms, E1, E2, E3, and E4. So these are toroids bundled over toroid, and they have a symplectic, naturally symplectic form given by E1 wedge E2 plus E3 wedge E4. And they are close, the omega is close, easily checked. And you can check that the primitive form has extra element, E2 wedge E3, is which is in trivial in Delam cohomology, but non-trivial in this D plus D minus cohomology that we are talking about. So the primitive cohomology is not the same as Delam cohomology. And well, we like to understand what they mean. And they can be thought as a Poincaré dual of a Lagrangian submanifold L that wraps the toroid's fiber over a point on the base toroid. And this toroid is trivial in standard cohomology. With a probability choice of an almost complex structure represented by the omega 2 seal form, as written here, E1 plus IE2 wedge E3 plus IE4. The Lagrangians, this L becomes a special Lagrangian cycle, as you can see from this calculation. The real part over it equals zero, imaginary part is a volume. And this is trivial in homology, and therefore it's not the same, well, it cannot occur in scalar geometry. So this is for the Kodaira first example. So we have a non-trivial element in the primitive cohomology, but not so in Delam cohomology. Anyway, this should be interesting, and so we like to talk about this more. So we look at the filter forms besides the form that we discussed earlier. It turns out to be more natural to look at filter forms. The K forms, as we said, can be decomposed uniquely as BK plus omega wedge BK minus 2, etc. And we look at a filter according to the degree. Pi CO is BK, pi 1 is BK plus omega wedge BK minus 2, etc. So we filter the K forms by this filtering property. And so we have space of P filter forms. So we have written it in this form. So starting from primitive forms to the space of all forms in that way. So getting a little bit step by step more complicated. Okay. So there are elliptic complex and cohomologies for these P filter forms as well. And we found that the following complex is elliptic. So we have D plus mapping this way and coming back, and D plus D minus. Where D plus is the projection to this filter complex of the exterior differentiation, D minus is the joint star R, D star R, that the star R was defined earlier. So we have this filter cohomology and all that relate to this elliptic complex. Well, these are related to, in the cohomology level, is related to the standard Lepsius map, which is just obtained by taking wedge product with omega to the power r. And well, of course, these maps on the cohomology level are purely cohomology, cohomological. So these maps has kernel and co-kernel. This is turns out to be accelerated and encoded in the symplectic cohomology. And these are given by this long excess sequence involving primitive cohomology that we defined earlier. So the L is a map from Durham cohomology. And then there's kernel and co-kernel, which implies this last equation in the case of D equals 6, co-kernel plus kernel, or the Lepsius map. So in fact, there is a triangle, a simple excess triangle, the map, the Lepsius map from Durham cohomology, and in between there's this filter cohomology, the symplectic cohomology we were discussing earlier. Of course, the kernel and co-kernel of the map can change according to the cohomology class of omega, so the dimension of the symplectic cohomology can change accordingly. So they are not topological invariants, but symplectic invariants. Now, interesting thing is actually define a product for the primitive forms, and more generally for P filter forms. This gives the filter cohomology ring structure, which is different from the Durham cohomology ring. So the question is to understand a product which will preserve the filter cohomology. And so there's a natural algebraic structure on this filter form, this form turns out. That takes a while for us to come up with such a product. And the product, the ring structure that we define on this primitive cohomology ring turns out to be different for sure from the Durham cohomology ring. And we shall give some examples. The product we define is interesting as it involves first order derivative operators. The product itself involves differentiation. So I will tell you what that is. So first of all, this follows from understanding the grading that we have before. We just write down the filter algebra in this way. This is the elliptic complex that I discussed earlier. D plus at the first line and the second line is D minus, and joined by D plus D minus. So this complex has differential maps from Fj to Fj plus 1, the filter cohomology. And for the first part, it's just D plus. And the middle part is D plus D minus, as you see here. And the last part is D minus. So there's a second order operator appears suddenly. And it has the property that it is a complex in the sense dj plus 1, dj equals 0. So every guy is first order except the middle guy. So this middle guy that caused some difference. And we would like the differential that we're operating on the filter complex satisfy the grading and satisfy the Reinert's rule. So that's what we want. So this will preserve, this makes sure the product would be well defined in the primitive cohomology that we define. So for example, in the case of the product and P1 cross P2 equal F1 cross F2, it required the following property. This is a property that is different from the other first order operators, we need to have these properties in order for our Lyra's rule to be true for D free. So there's a second order operator on the left in this equation and first order operator on the right only. And yet we insist them to be equal. So therefore, the only possibility comes out from the fact that the product itself should involve some differentiation. And so that's what we do. So we define the product on primitive form, on the filter primitive form in the following way. So Bj product Bk is defined on the right-hand side. So it involves differentiation D and D minus and projection and star operator. The rest is simpler except the first one. So this turns out they are great commutative and satisfy the roundness rule that we expect. And L inverse is defined by this operator, which is the inverse of the Lepsius map. So so this gives rise to the primitive product and its generalization of filter forms give rise to a ring structure for the filter cohomology, FPH. This looks a little bit strange.
Yeah, on zero forms, is it the usual product?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
So this is an interesting product. It is a kind of example of this A infinity structure, which I never learned before when I was a student. But anyway, so I remind myself, presumably everybody here, you know what they are. So these are the maps, multilinear maps, and on a graded vector space of degree 2 minus k satisfy the strong homotopy associative conditions. And these so m1 increase the grading by 1 and x line differentiation. And m preserved grading corresponding to the product structure. And therefore, it's just a Lyapunov product rule when m1 is a differential. M3 measures the associativity of the product map. So these are the conditions that we like to exhibit. And in fact, in the product structure that we propose, m4 and m5 and on are all equal to 0. So I only care about m1, m2, and m3. So so for primitive forms, the m3 looks like that. So what happens is that our product is not associative, and it is measured by this obstruction. And yet, it is commutative and set to the Lyapunov rule. And therefore, it defines a nice product on the cohomology, nonetheless. And it's still associative in the cohomology level. So therefore, well, all the problem, as I said, is caused by the fact we have a second order operator in our elliptic complex, D plus D minus. So it seems to be natural because, as I said, it comes out from the study of the attempt to understand mirror symmetry in 2A theory. I think we are still developing this theory and understanding the harmonic theory behind it. If you give me an almost complex structure J, we have an elliptic operator associated to it. So you can talk about the similar thing as what people have been talking. So given a J structure, we can talk about elliptic operator, but we have elliptic complex no matter what. So we are still developing this whole theory. And whether there's some quantum correlation or not, we will see. I think it should be there, but we have not developed into it. We are still doing the classical elliptic complex associated this whole thing. So these are naturally attached to sympathetic geometry, which I hope would be interesting and useful. Thank you.
Questions? Yes.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there's an equivariant version of this, if you have a Hamiltonian group action on the manifold.
Oh, I'm sure that should be, but I never haven't thought about it yet. We are still developing it.
Yeah, you have several. First of all, this harmonic primitive homology, limited degree, are responsible for Lagrangian manifolds up to Hamiltonian isotopy, and in fact, one can have even a simple example in two dimensions of MK.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually, found out with Willmillen that one have stability structure is very exotic one, even for curves on the surface. Yeah. And the question is if you consider kind of conditions of volume element, I have no idea how to relate this real street form and
Because it's only a real part of the form.
And how it depends on generalized, you mentioned
that there's a generalized complex structure. Oh, there's a generalized complex structure formulation, more complicated, which I don't want to go into.
Other more questions? Well then, thank you again.
Yeah, okay.